Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 412. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter, the handle is thisshowisogay, and of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in thisshowisogay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have a most entertaining episode for you this week with two incredible guests. Let me introduce the first one to you right this very second. Barney Cheng is an actor, a writer, a producer, and a director. As an actor, he has appeared in such films as Woody Allen's Hollywood Ending, for which he won rave reviews, and opposite Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 3. The award-winning films he has been a part of have screened at hundreds of film festivals all over the world. Some highlights include the short films Steps, The Red Dress, and a film he produced called To Comfort You, which won the Best Drama and Best Film at the Beverly Hills Shorts Festival. His feature-length film, Baby Steps, which he wrote, directed, and starred, will be released on DVD, Blu-ray, and VOD in the US and Canada on August 15th. It won the 2014 Tribeca Film Institute's All Access Award, and let me just say, I watched it this past weekend. I absolutely loved it, but before we talk about it, let me first say, Barney, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
We have so much ground to cover, Barney. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Barney, what is with all this film stuff? You went to school to be a political science major.
You know, I was a closet actor when I was in college. In high school, I was in, you know, all the musicals and plays, speech, and when I got accepted to Stanford, you know, like, there was really no, like, good drama department, and everybody, so I majored in political science by default, you know, everybody was going to law school, and, you know, I just realized that that's not the path that I wanted to go. So I gave all that up and moved to New York to be an actor, to start it all over again.
We have heard so much from past guests about that move to New York, that fateful move to New York that so many of your colleagues have done before you. How did it treat you?
Oh, my God. New York, if you can survive in New York, you can survive anywhere.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard. But, you know, but also, you know, when I was in my 20s, that, you know, you didn't really care, you know, that much. So, you know, you just sort of, you know, do the best you can. But I had a great time. I had a really, really amazing time in New York. And that was the time when Sex and the City was playing, filming. So, you know, it was fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
What was your goal? Where did you see yourself?
Well, you know, back then I just wanted to be in a chorus boy in a musical.
Nice.
So, you know, your goals change throughout your life, right? Like back then, that's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to dance on Broadway and sing on Broadway. So, you know, I did that, you know, and started taking acting classes and started taking Shakespeare acting class, stuff like that. And then, you know, it sort of transformed my idea of success, sort of changed, and I evolved into, you know, like an actor. And then 2002, I auditioned for Woody for Hollywood Ending, and, you know, acted in that movie. And then that movie took me to California, to Los Angeles, where I'm from.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that led to filmmaking, and, you know, and this is where I'm at now.
Nice.
So it's sort of, your goals change.
Of course, of course. As much as I love hearing all of our guests' coming out stories over the past 9 years of the show, I particularly like the coming out stories as coming out into the entertainment industry and telling your family, hey, this is what I want to be doing. How was it telling your family, this is my commitment?
It was really, really hard.
Yeah.
Because for Asian American family, you know, parents want you to be successful in all, you know, in all the traditional, you know, professions, you know, doctor, you know, engineer, you know, a kind of jobs that are stable, right? So when I told my mom, I came out to my mom that I'm not going to go to law school. I'm going to move to New York to be an actor, some wait tables, you know, and she was devastated.
Yeah.
She was devastated. But, you know, the most important thing for her was that I'm successful in whatever field that I choose. You know, at first she was very worried, you know, because I wasn't successful, you know, I was struggling. But then the Woody Allen film really helped to validate, you know, that all the hard work, all the struggle was, you know, were worthwhile. And to her, that was the first baby steps of accepting, you know, the that I wanted to be an actor. And slowly, you know, it's about proving to her that you know, that I'm that I'm hardworking, that I have a goal, that I'm working toward. So, you know, so it's similar to coming out stories, right? Like, you know, parents worry about you being gay. They worry because they don't want you to be discriminated against in the world. But if you can prove to them that you live a very happy, fulfilling life, that's validating to them. So I see the parallel.
Yeah, I would have to imagine that your mom was pretty darn proud when she saw you on screen with Woody Allen there in Hollywood Ending.
Oh, she was thrilled.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Well, we have to talk all about Baby Steps. I have so many questions, but let's dial it back a step. Who is Barney Cheng as a director?
Okay, so directing, I learned from Woody Allen.
Yeah.
So when I did Hollywood Ending, I remember the first day that I was very nervous, you know, because, you know, a lot of my scenes were with Woody. Opposite Woody. So we didn't really rehearse any scenes. He would just like, you know, let's do it once. And then that was it. And he would film it. And he would say, oh, that was good. Let's move on. Right. So he didn't give a lot of directions. And I was a nervous wreck because, you know, like he didn't give me any direction and it was fine. But throughout the entire filming process, I was observing and I realized being a good director means that you cast the right actors that are right for the part, who are smart, who knew the part well, and you just respect them and let them create that magic. You don't need to, like, you know, direct them that much, you know. You don't need to micromanage them. So to me, so that's what I did in Baby Steps, right? We hired the best actors for all the parts.
Yeah.
All the actors knew what they were doing. They did their homework. So I would sort of generally talk about the scene, and then we would just do it. And then I would make tiny little, you know, adjustments here and there, minimally. And, you know, it came out great.
It came out wonderful.
Thank you.
I can kind of wrap my mind around writing a movie. I can somewhat envision directing a movie that I wrote. In no reality can I understand writing, directing, and starring all in the same film, Barney.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's like, and on top of all that, as you know, the film is in both English and Chinese, right?
Yeah.
So we had two sets of crews, like American crew in the U.S. and a Taiwanese crew in Taiwan and, you know, different countries. And then, so I needed to, and people in Taiwan didn't really speak English. And then people here, you know, in the U.S. obviously, they don't speak Chinese.
Right.
So I needed to communicate in both English and Chinese to my cast and crew. And then, like, and then stay calm, you know, and, you know, and act, you know, in the scene. And it was schizophrenic. It was going back and forth, you know, reviewing the footage, making sure that all aspects of the what we filmed was good. It was the most difficult things I've done in my life. I'm glad I survived it.
I see it either as, and it's one or the other, that you slept really well during the shoot or you didn't sleep at all. I see no in between.
It was crazy.
Oh my gosh. Well, for people who have not heard about Baby Steps, and we're going to talk all about it, give everyone the pitch of this film that you wrote and directed and starred in.
So I came across a compelling story about a gay Israeli couple. They wanted to have a family, right? So they have a baby. So they hired an American egg donor and went to India and worked with an Indian surrogate. and 9 months later, they took the baby from India back to Israel. I thought the story was incredible, right? So I changed the ethnicity of the couple, and I imagined the story as Asian American. So imagine an Asian American couple doing all that, right? Traveling around the globe to create their non-traditional family, and throwing into the mix a Taiwanese mother who is meddlesome, who wants to control every aspect of the process all the way in Taipei. And initially, she's not very accepting of the gay son's sexuality, but throughout the process, the emotional journey and the physical journey that she takes with the, you know, with the son, slowly comes to terms with the non-traditional family that they're making. So it's a cross-cultural story. It's about being authentic of who you are. It's about creating the heartwarming non-traditional family.
Yeah. Look, I am not saying that you did not do a wonderful job in this movie and that all the other actors did not do a wonderful job, but I could see 3 spinoffs just with Ma.
Oh, she's amazing, isn't she?
And she's got quite a history in film. Tell everybody about that actress.
Okay. So Grace Gray is considered Meryl Streep of Asia. She's often compared to Meryl Streep of Asia. She has won so many, like, the Academy Award equivalents of Asia, right? A Golden Horse Award. She was in The Wedding Banquet with Ang Lee. She was in so many films. An incredible actress. She can often make you cry in one scene. The next scene, she can make you laugh. And it's so nuanced. She doesn't even have to say anything. From looking at her eyes, you know exactly what she's thinking. And she could switch, like, just with her eye, you know, with her eye expressions.
I would have to imagine that the day that you found out that you got her for the film, you were a little bit excited.
Oh, you know, I was so happy. Actually, it was a journey. We took the journey together. She agreed to do the film early on, and then we workshopped. We came up with the story slowly together. The first draft of the story, of the script, focused very much on the gay couple. But after working with her, we realized it would be more compelling to tell the story from the mother's perspective, that, you know, that she wasn't accepting of her son initially, but throughout the process, she slowly come to terms with, you know, her son's sexuality, and proudly embrace this new family that they're forming together. So, to us, it was more compelling to tell a mother's coming out story. Yeah. Because, you know, like, gay coming out story has been done so many times, right? It's not interesting anymore.
Again, listeners, we are here with Barney Cheng, actor, writer, producer, director. Look, when we look at the landscape of films out there, we know that there's a dearth of LGBTQ characters in mainstream films. We know there are even less LGBTQ films, and we know there are even less people of color starring in LGBTQ films. Why is it important that we get more of this content out there?
You know, with what's happening in our world right now, Trump is, you know, with his anti-immigration, you know, like anti-LGBT sentiment that's happening now. I think it's more than ever important for us, the filmmakers, and also audiences, to see marginalized characters, fully fleshed out marginalized characters, you know, people of color, LGBT people, Muslims, right? Women, you know, people like that don't get represented on screen. So it's through images that we could come together, you know, through empathy and share experiences and realize, you know, we're all the same deep down, you know. So I think it's more important than ever now that we need to do that. That's why I feel that this film was really, really important that it's coming out now.
And this film is important on so many levels. It's not every film, Barney, that gets screened by U.S. embassies around the world.
That was really interesting because uh, I was I got an email one day from State Department inviting me to show the movie in U.S. Embassy in Beijing and also six other cities in China, Mongolia. And I was like, wow, what's happening? So we screened the film in six major cities in China simultaneously. And then I was invited to the Beijing U.S. Embassy. And after the screening, we had a Skype Q&A where all six embassies were, you know, like audiences from different embassies would like ask me questions. And then, you know, and it was sold out. The screenings were sold out. There were so many people there. I felt incredibly honored that the State Department during the Obama administration invited me for that. And, you know, the U.S. diplomat invited me back this year. But that was before the election.
Yeah.
So I'm going to email him back and go, am I still invited back this year?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, unfortunately, some changes afoot all over the place, but some positive changes your film is tied into, right? Like you did these screenings and a lot of conversations about marriage equality in Taiwan.
Yeah, you know, it sort of captured the cultural zeitgeist in Taiwan. When we were making the film, we partnered and collaborated with a lot of LGBT organizations while making the film. And when the movie came out, we made a huge effort to reach out to LGBT communities and audiences. And a lot of LGBT marriage equality activists from Taiwan referenced the film when discussing about, you know, marriage equality during the debate in Taiwan. And so I'm just so proud that Taiwan is going to be the first democracy in Asia to legalize same-sex marriage. And I'm happy that, you know, Baby Steps contributed a little bit to that struggle.
Absolutely. As I said earlier, it will be available on DVD on August 15th. People will be able to stream it or watch it on demand or purchase a DVD. When people finish watching it and the credits are done rolling, right? What do you, Barney, want them to think at the end? By the way, knowing that you wrote it and directed it and started it, I don't trust you to not be there for every single screening every time someone watches this. I expected you were just going to show up in my living room and be the craft services table. But what would you like people to be thinking about as soon as the credits are done rolling?
So I made this film to connect with my mother in my personal life. I came out to my mom a long time ago when I was in college, but it was really difficult for my mom to be authentic in front of her friends and relatives about me being, you know, about having a gay son, right? So every time I visit my mom in Taiwan, we would have family gatherings and relatives would ask me, Barney, do you have a girlfriend? When are you getting married? Blah, 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 right? And I would look at my mom and she would be very uncomfortable and she would try to change the subject and, you know, she would talk about the girlfriends I never had, right? So she was very much in the closet about me being gay. So for a while that was fine. But, you know, as I live in West Hollywood, I'm out, you know. It's not okay for me anymore. You know, I can't have that kind of relationship. It's not authentic. So I wanted to have a dialogue with my mom, so I made this film to have that kind of conversation with my mom. So after the movie came out, my mom went on a talk show with me to talk about me being gay. She used this movie as her coming out, as a way to come out to her friends and family. So my relationship with my mom has improved so much.
Wow.
We talk authentically. You know, the film has brought us closer. So to answer your question, as the credits start rolling, I hope that the film, enable people to feel empowered to connect with people they love, to share, to share their stories authentically with the family, and you know, and come out and be visible and be proud.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my wish.
And we want to remind our listeners that Barney's mom will be on next week's episode. I so want to talk to her now. That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Hey, by the way, if our listeners don't know about the incredible work of Project Angel Food, tell everybody about that great work.
So the Project Angel Food was started back when AIDS was killing a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people could not, basically it was... The mission was to nourish people that both the body, the spirit, you know, to help people that can't, you know, make their own food and provide free food. So I used to deliver every Friday for people with, you know, illness, life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. It's an incredible organization. It's run mostly by volunteers. There's a staff, but hundreds and thousands of people actually volunteer for the organization. We cook, you know, in the kitchen. We deliver food. We have a community garden where we grow organic fruits and vegetables. We have events throughout the year. So it's an organization that brings different communities together, LGBT community. I mean, all kinds of communities, film communities, anybody, you know, high school, you know, anybody who wants to volunteer. So it brings the community together. So that I like that a lot, you know, coming together and, you know, doing something that's a great cause.
Love it. Love it. Well, what is coming up for you, sir, that you are excited about?
We are adapting Baby Steps into a TV series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, first of all, I love TV. I want to write and direct the TV because I think it's a renaissance right now for TV, right? A lot of TVs that are amazing. So we're adapting Baby Steps into a TV series. The movie the movie that your audience will see, it took place in, you know, during the Obama administration. However, the TV series obviously will take place during the Trump administration. So there's going to be a lot of conflict. And the family lives in the U.S. now. The mother lives in the U.S. Danny's boyfriend is now a cop. He's Latino, and, you know, it's just a lot of conflict right now. So, you know, we're excited about the TV series.
Ah, exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. Listeners, this is what you need to be aware of. Barney's feature-length film, Baby Steps, which he wrote, directed, and starred, it's going to be released on DVD, Blu-ray, and VOD in the U.S. and Canada on August 15th. On August 15th, you'll be able to stream it. You'll be able to buy it. You can learn more about Barney by going to barneycheng.tv. That's barneycheng.tv, and we will certainly link to that. I got to tell you, Barney, I loved this movie. I absolutely love this movie. It certainly brought a smile to my face. I was completely invested in these characters, and I'm so excited that their journeys will continue. It's just great work, sir.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thank you.
So please keep doing what you're doing, and we are looking forward to more from you.
Thank you, Ken. I will do the best I can and be a great filmmaker. I'm learning every day, but I will work hard to, you know, to tell more stories.
Baby, don't put the sugar on me. Don't talk me up so sweet. Baby, don't undress me in your kisses when they're my mind to keep. Some boys think I'm carved out of stone. Yes, and I'm so smart, 'cause just a few kind words from you, I fall apart. Oh, yes, I do. I fall apart.
All right, folks, and we are back with another incredible guest for this week's episode. Jason Davis is a New York City-based author and humorist. He just put out his first picture book entitled, and I kid you not, this is the title, it's right in front of me right now, My Pops Atop. It is a witty picture book penned from the point of view of a young African-American boy growing up in a same-sex couple household. It is available on Amazon right this second, and Jason is available on our show also right this second. Jason, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
How did this book come about, Jason?
Well, I've always wanted to write something funny. And I've written things, odds and ends and all that, but this idea just kind of popped into my head, so to speak. My Pops Atop popped in my head not long ago, where when I was growing up, my mother was always getting me these little golden books. And are you familiar with little golden books?
Of course.
Okay, well, I grew up on them, and, you know, it was like my father's a fireman, and my mother's a nurse, and this and that kind of stuff. And, you know, very innocent kind of books, you know, very sweet, innocent pictures and all that. And it just, I don't know, it just came to me, and I'm like, why don't I use the same format, but, you know, do it in a juicier way, a sexier way, or a gay way, and, you know, add some humor to it. And so I did, and I tried to get an agent, tried to get a publisher. Nobody then wanted to touch it. So in this day and age, anybody can publish their own books. And I thought, well, let me try it. Let me do it. And I did it. I, you know, published it on Amazon and for Kindle and Barnes & Noble for Nook. And it's been out for around a month and sold quite a few copies around the world, actually.
So fun. Now, we know that this results in a success story because people can go and purchase it right now, but I would love to talk about the process. When you say that publishers wouldn't touch it, what kind of responses were you getting?
None. You know, or people were saying, well, first I went the agent route, and they were like very polite. No, this is not quite for us, you know. And then some publishers, you know, the gay companies that publish gay books are few and far in between these days.
Yeah.
It used to be much better. And the ones I got, it's just not, you know, kind of form letters or form emails. It's just not for us, or it's not right for us. And I could sort of understand it because it doesn't really fit into that many. It's kind of an odd category, really. It's a picture book. It's you know, borderline controversial. I mean, I think I've actually lost some friends over this book.
Really? Do you think that's true? That would be amazing. And honestly, I would put that on my LinkedIn right now.
I really do. I mean, I've shared, you know, told my friends about the book. And I, you know, when I, in some cases, I sent them copies, emailed them copies sometimes. I figured, well, I've supported them enough. Let them go to Amazon and buy a copy for $3.99. Okay, you know, they can manage it. They can afford it. And they did. Some people said, oh, I'm so excited. I'm psyched. I'm going to read it, you know. And then I never heard pee from them ever again. And this is weeks ago. And it's kind of an awkward situation. Like, what do? You go back to these people and say, well, why didn't I hear from you? Or what did you like it? I should do that, and I eventually will. But, you know, they were so excited. Oh, congratulations. This is wonderful. And then nothing. And, you know, you saw the book. It takes 10 minutes to read, 5 minutes to read.
Yeah.
It's a very short book. Now, if they don't like it, fine. I have nothing against it. Maybe, well, they can say, well, it's not my cup of tea, or I don't know. It was all right. It wasn't for me. Or nothing. Nothing at all.
Wow.
So, you know, but then I have other friends who've written some nice comments on Amazon. So, you know, you win and lose.
Yeah. As my mother would say, those weren't really your friends to begin with then.
Well, you know, there's, you know, it's not a book for everyone, and it's not meant to be a book for everyone, but you think, you know, it's like, I'm not reinventing the wheel. It's not meant to be nasty or overly sexual or anything. It's a book about a kid's accidentally going into his parents' room, same sex, and they're having sex. And that's happened to me. I mean, I had straight parents, But that happened to me, and that sort of inspired this book in a way. Because when I was a young kid, like 8 years old, around the same age as the kid in the book, in the middle of the night, I heard my mother moaning and groaning. It was like, what's going on here? I don't know what's going on. Why is my father doing anything? I walk into the bedroom in the middle of the night. It's dark, but I see something going on. My father starts cursing me out. I'm thinking, well, you know, whether it's a straight household or a gay household, you know, kids are bound to, this can happen. And what happens? And what does the kid, how does the kid react? And how does he interpret it? And that's sort of what the book's about. You know?
We should be very clear about audience. You know, I am a huge fan of buying children's books with LGBT themes for my friends and family. This is maybe not one that I would buy for a child, correct?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. This is not a kid's bedtime story. Definitely not. 18 plus. It looks innocent, but if you read the title correctly, which some people don't, or you read the first page, which I kind of warn people that this is not, you know, I have a reader discretion advice on the first page of the book after you open it up on the ebook. So if you're blind, you'll get, immediately you'll know this is not for kids. This is not for kids. This is for adults.
Right there on the cover, we see the words inspired by an old Greek tale. What are we talking about here?
Well, I think you could figure it out. I think that's gone over the heads of some people.
Okay.
But I think you understand.
I worry maybe some of our listeners don't. It was actually, I will tell you, look, I've been doing this show for almost 10 years now. You are one of the most difficult people to come up with questions for, which is very entertaining for me.
Well, if you want an answer for the Greek tale, it used to be years ago, you were Greek active or Greek passive, you know, French active, French passive. Those terms are sort of out of, gone with the wind. Now it's, so if people understand what I'm saying, instead of top or bottom, it was Greek active or passive. Okay. So it was kind of a joke. You know? And I think a lot of people probably don't know what I'm talking about, but I think you do. So. And now the audience has been educated. So there you go.
You are bringing enlightenment. I mean, sure, you lost some friends, but you're bringing enlightenment. And that's the important part about this week's episode. Now, talk to me about some of the responses that you've received, because there are some great reviews there on Amazon.
Yes, there are, actually. And these, I should be honest, all three of them are people I know. But I didn't beg them, and I didn't say, look, please, I need something on Amazon. You got to do this, right? And the three people, two of them are extremely, one of them, extremely picky person who wrote this review. And I had sent him something I read written years ago, and he hated it. And he had no qualms about telling me how much he hated it. It was a novel I wrote. Hated it, really hated it. But this, you know, I sent it along, and he really liked it. So I was pleased about that. But the funniest review, if people do go to Amazon and take a look, is my writing teacher wrote this review. And I told her about the book, and I sent her a copy. I don't think she ever read it, because the review makes no sense at all. But it's a glowing review. So... but it really, I don't know. I don't know if you saw the reviews. The first review is kind of makes no sense at all. But I'm glad it's there. You know, it's a nice review, and I love her. So what can I say? But you know, I have gotten tweets, some emails from people, saying that they liked it, or they were like, oh my god, you know, is this true? You know, they were like shocked by the title. So yeah, I did get some nice comments. And I was hoping to get more, you know, because people, even if they're bad, I just like to know what people are thinking. I really would love to know what people are thinking. It's always, you just don't know. And, you know, everybody's busy and, you know, has lots of things to do. But I would love it. And if any of your listeners do decide to take a look at the book, you know, I would love to hear from them. And, you know, they can tweet me. It's Twitter address is at Jason Davis LGBT. So.
Nice.
Or if they haven't read it and they want to know a little bit more about it, they can always send me a tweet, and
nice.
I would respond immediately.
Tell our listeners about Tori McKenney.
Oh, that's a good story. Tori McKenney didn't want her name to be associated with this book. So she really is an illustrator, and I think she's a terrific illustrator. And when I wrote the book, I really wanted, you know, somebody who captured that innocence of the Golden Books, you know. And a lot of these artists today that, I put out feelers and I went to Craigslist and, you know, trying to find something. And so many people design on the computer now. And it has this kind of glossy look. It doesn't have that warm, old-fashioned quality look of the Golden Books and some and Dick and Jane and whatever. It just doesn't. But this woman had it. And she sent me some samples of her work. And I sent her a copy of the book. And she, I don't know if she liked the book or not, but she said she would do it for me. And she got paid, but she didn't want her name on that. So she is based in New York. And I think she did a great job. I really think she did a great job. I mean, I kind of told her what I wanted, but she added some of her own flavor. And she's done a lot of work, you know, a lot of kids' books and other things, but it's not her name.
Nice.
But she gave me that name as her, as a name to use.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll get to work with her again, because I am planning to do more of these books.
Yes, that's, of course, our final question for you. What's coming up for you?
Well, my follow-up book is going to be called My Uncle Sodom is a Bottom. And that's going to be coming out probably early next year, with or without Tori's help, but hopefully with her help. And there's a whole series of these. I wrote around 9 of them, actually, and they're waiting to go out. So whether I publish them all or not, I like to get them out. And I think they're funny. I know. At least I think they're funny.
Nice.
Some people, hopefully other people will enjoy them as well.
Well, give everyone the pitch, because we love our elevator pitch. Why should they go to Amazon and pick this up right this very second?
Well, they should go to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com.
Yeah.
The book is available only in ebook format. So if you have a Kindle or a Nook, you're in good luck. Otherwise, hopefully one day it'll be published in book form. But right now, those are the only ways. I just think that it's very lighthearted. It's unusual. It's funny. You know, it's also kind of reflects today's same-sex families, because I purposely wanted it to be a multicultural family. The narrator of the book is a young African-American boy. And then his pop is this a very handsome young Latino man. And his dad is an older white man. So we have covered three bases there. And that's not unusual, of course. You know, there's so many different types of gay families. But it's meant to be funny and amusing and lighthearted. But it does capture, you know, an innocence of childhood. Plus, it also reflects kids today, you know, are a lot more savvier than when I grew up. You know, when I grew up and I ran into my parents' bedroom, you know, in the middle of the night, I didn't know what the hell was going on. Today, kids know what's going on, but they still have questions and they're still uncertain about what things are, and they put it in their own terms. So that was another thing about the book. I wanted it to put it, the story in the thought process of what a little kid was, what he was reminded of when he saw his dad's going at it. And so, you know, if that's your cup of tea, enjoy it.
There it is.
And if not, you know, hey, you know, it's not for everybody, but it's meant to be funny. It's
good.
Meant to be funny and harmless, you know.
It's a pretty quick read, and it'll bring a smile to your face in one way or another. I promise you that, having read it today. Everybody, go on over to Amazon, because Jason Davis's first picture book is out right this very second. Jason, it's a fun tale. I like featuring things that are just so different that are out there, and people should go on over and pick up My Pops Atop. I love that there are going to be sequels. And listeners, of course, you can reach Jason. He's over there on Twitter, Jason Davis LGBT. We're looking forward to more from you, Jason.
Well, thank you so much, Ken. It was a pleasure speaking with you and to your audience.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode, so let's get to all of the latest LGBTQ news that's out there. Although I will say, if you guys ever have any guest ideas whatsoever, send them on over to us. Just drop me an email, Ken at thisshowissogay.com. That's Ken at thisshowissogay.com. Every single email gets answered, and any guest idea you have, whether it's someone really aspirational that we'll try to get, and that would be amazing if it's some super well-known person who's doing incredible work, but I also love featuring people that we might not know about. Maybe they're doing something locally, but they are doing it so valiantly, or maybe it's someone who's just starting out. We love featuring all different types of people who are using their voice to make a difference. So do that. Send that email on over to Ken at thisshowissogay.com. We are picking up our LGBTQ news pretty much where we left off last week. I think we had 5 or 6 stories just about President Trump's ban on transgender troops in the military. And when we recorded the show, it was actually the day that he put that ban out there. And there has been very little information added to this, but still the reactions continue. And let's talk about some more of those reactions. 56 retired military officials, that would be 56 retired military officials, have spoken out against President Trump's planned ban on transgender troops. Trump, of course, enraged all of us when he announced this ban on Twitter, because again, that's an official mode of communication these days. He claimed that, just to remind you, the military, quote, cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender would entail. It's not even using correct language. So the decision, which was allegedly, and nobody's really that sure, there's a lot of theories out there, but the decision was allegedly made to appease anti-LGBT Republican lawmakers. Well, it has distressed the thousands of transgender people who are already serving in the armed forces. Trump had claimed that the decision was supported by, quote, my generals, despite not consulting the Pentagon. Well, in a challenge to President Trump, 56 retired generals and admirals. I'm not saying that everyone in the military is not important, but these are 56 retired generals and admirals. They spoke out on the issue in a joint letter. The letter says this, quote, the commander-in-chief has tweeted a total ban of honorably serving transgender troops. This proposed ban, if implemented, would cause significant disruptions, deprive the military of mission-critical talent, and compromise the integrity of transgender troops who would be forced to live a lie, as well as non-transgender peers who would be forced to choose between reporting their comrades or disobeying policy. As a result, the proposed ban would degrade readiness even more than the failed Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Patriotic transgender Americans who are serving and who want to serve must not be dismissed, deprived of medically necessary health care, or forced to compromise their integrity to hide their identity. The letter continues, quote, President Trump seeks to ban transgender service members because of the financial cost and disruption associated with transgender military service. We respectfully disagree and consider these claims to be without merit. The RAND Corporation, as well as research in the New England Journal of Medicine, found that the financial cost of providing health care to transgender troops would be, at most, $8.4 million a year. This amounts to 0.01%. Let me repeat that for you all. This is straight from their letter of 56 retired generals and admirals. That amount, $8.4 million a year, this amounts to 0.01% of the military's annual health care budget. As for ostensible disruptions, transgender troops have been serving honorably and openly for the past year and have been widely praised by commanders. 18 foreign nations, including the UK and Israel, allow transgender troops to serve, and none has reported any detriment to readiness. And there's a little bit more. I'm going to read more because this is like the best we ever could have said this. The letter concludes, thousands of transgender Americans are currently serving in uniform, and there is no reason to single out these brave men and women and deny them the medical care that they require. The military conducted a thorough research process on this issue and concluded that inclusive policy for transgender troops promotes readiness. Look at all that. Stephen Peters, the Human Rights Campaign National Press Secretary and a Marine veteran himself, said this, quote, these retired generals and admirals have made it clear exactly how harmful President Trump's transgender military ban would be to our nation's armed forces. President Trump's and Vice President Pence's attack on bravely serving transgender troops is dangerous and unpatriotic. They absolutely must listen to these voices of reason and reverse course in support of all of our nation's heroes, regardless of their gender identity. 56 retired generals and admirals. But that's not all. The Admiral of the United States Coast Guard has defied President Trump's orders to ban trans people from the military. Admiral Paul Zuckhunft spoke to military.com to say that he would not honor the ban on trans troops serving openly. He said that he reached out to the 13 out trans members of the Coast Guard. He said this, quote, "I reached out personally to Lieutenant Taylor Miller, who was featured on the cover of the Washington Post last week. If you read that story, Taylor's family had disowned her. Her family is the United States Coast Guard, and I told Taylor I will not turn my back. We have made an investment in you, and you have made an investment in the Coast Guard, and I will not break faith." The Coast Guard is the only part of the United States military which falls under Homeland Security, which is because it primarily works within the United States. So there you go. That is the Admiral of the United States Coast Guard saying, no, not doing this. And not only that, but I'm going to reach out to our out trans brothers and sisters serving here in the United States Coast Guard and tell them that I have their back. And that's not all. Multi-million-dollar music platform Bandcamp has pledged to donate all its proceeds from one day to fight Donald Trump's transgender military ban. Bandcamp said that they will fight back by giving 100% of its revenues to the Transgender Law Center, which is a trans civil rights group. According to the company, its users have paid artists $231 million using the service, including $5.2 million in the last 30 days. This averages out to $20,000 a day in revenues for Bandcamp after it takes about 12% of the overall amount spent. But there's a great reason to believe that people will flock to support this and raise even more money. The music service held a similar flash fundraiser for the American Civil Liberties Union in February after Donald Trump tried to institute his Muslim ban for the first time. The campaign raised more than $120,000 for the ACLU as music fans passed the $1 million mark with their spending. In a statement, Bandcamp said this, quote, "We are a platform for artistic expression and all manner of variants in experience and identity, including gender and sexuality, is welcome here. We support our LGBTQ users and staff, and we stand against any person or group that would see them further marginalized. This includes the current United States administration and its recent capricious declaration that transgender troops will no longer be able to serve in the military." There you go. A lot of services that are going to be helped out by this one day of fundraising. It is happening this week on Friday, August 4th. That is everything going on. And by the way, that's not everything going on with trans people being banned from the military in a tweet. Again, there was no policy to this. People in the Pentagon said we were in no way consulted. Heck, this could just go away. But it's just a threat that's put out there to mollify people in the Republican Party, and we'll see if anything even comes of it. Sticking with our trans brothers and sisters, a black transgender woman was shot to death in the early hours of August 1st this week. T.T. Dangerfield was shot in Atlanta outside of an apartment complex. She is the 16th black trans woman recorded to be murdered this year. The 16th black trans woman recorded to be murdered this year. The 32-year-old was found with multiple gunshot wounds next to her vehicle in College Park. She was taken to the Grady Memorial Hospital, but later died because of her injuries. We have so much work to do, folks. We have so much work to do. Please do not be complacent. Please do not be one of those people out there. I hope that you're not, who says we have marriage equality, all is well. All is not well. All is not well. The murder of T.T. Dangerfield comes just days after comedian Lil Duval went on the radio show The Breakfast Club and joked about killing trans women. Duval, whose real name is Roland Powell, said that if he found out somebody was trans after having sex with them, he would kill them. Jokes, and by the way, this is radio, so you can't see me putting jokes in air quotes, jokes like that cannot exist. They cannot exist. Aside from the fact that they are legit not funny, we actually have some really hardcore issues right now with trans people being murdered in this country. We have so much work to do. Turning tail a little bit, a Christian radio host has warned against leaving boys alone in a same-sex environment like sleepovers or summer camp. Huh. Linda Harvey, a Christian radio host and founder of anti-LGBT Christian group Mission America, made the claim on radio show From the Median. The radio host took to the airwaves to warn about the dangers of putting children in a same-sex environment, cautioning parents about letting their kids attend sleepovers. On her website, she warns, quote, "If you promote sexual behavior to impressionable kids, more teens, especially those with fewer moral bearings, will say, why not? In same-sex circles, homosexual hookups can become a daring adventure at campouts and sleepovers." Huh. That was not the case for me at Timberlake Camp. I did not have that experience. She went on to say, quote, "Opportunity is everywhere that students of the same sex gather or socialize, and it's one reason homosexuality has traditionally been taboo at schools, camps, and youth organizations." She later explained this, quote, "What happens is, anytime there's any kind of same-sex environment, boys together, girls together, it attracts the people that would take advantage of them, and then it will be someone of the same sex, so access is what these people want. They want access to youth and access even to corruption. It might not be sexual, but it might be moral corruption of some kind." So apparently we need to be cautious of any types of same-sex gatherings, which is hilarious because apparently we're also supposed to be cautioned, because she has said this before, we need to be cautious about when boys and girls gather together. So basically, we really need to keep everybody alone. That's the message here. Who knew? Who knew? Now, on the other side of the equation, if you have not taken less than 5 minutes to watch this new animated film that's out there right now. It's a short film. It's called In a Heartbeat. You must check it out. In a Heartbeat was created by Beth David and Esteban Bravo. It tells the story of a shy boy whose heart pops out of his chest and eventually outs him. One of the creators, Esteban Bravo, said that they decided to explore LGBT themes through animation because it hasn't been done very much. He said this, quote, "Being gay is a subject that hadn't been widely explored in computer animation. We want to put out a message of love and self-acceptance to all the kids and young people who struggle to identify as LGBTQ, just like Sherwin does." It is brilliant. You must go check it out. It's right there on YouTube. You can just search for In a Heartbeat animated short film. It's only been out for 3 or 4 days at the time of this recording, and it's already been viewed 6.7 million times. My heart absolutely melted when I saw this. My heart absolutely melted. Again, you can go to YouTube. It's 4 minutes and 5 seconds. It's called In a Heartbeat animated short film. It's trending, 6.7 million views and climbing. It is so incredible. By the way, I clicked refresh just in this moment, and it went up another 15,000 views. So everybody is checking it out, and if you have not checked it out, you absolutely must. So I love that that's out there. There's a fun new article out there on Pink News. They have the top 10 most LGBT-friendly places to travel on your holiday. They say this, picking where to travel can be a tough decision and it can be made more complicated as an LGBT traveler. And so they put out the top 10 most LGBT-friendly places to visit. Let's recap them. Let's go to London. It's number one. I've never been to London. That's very exciting. I would love to go to London. So that's number one on the list. Also on the list, number two, Madrid. I've been to Madrid. It's wonderful. Number three, Toronto. Our neighbor right to the north, Toronto. Number four, Tel Aviv. I heard Tel Aviv is incredible. Number five, Copenhagen. Who knew? Copenhagen. Number six, Barcelona, which is one of my favorite places on this planet. Number seven, Berlin. Well, we know from our buddy travelsofadam.com that Berlin is an incredible place to be if you are an LGBT traveler. My old stomping grounds of New York is number eight. If you've not been to New York City, you of course must check out New York City. Number nine is Lisbon, right there in Portugal, Lisbon. And number 10 is, of course, San Francisco. top 10 places to go. And you can submit your ideas. You just go on over to pinknews.com and you can submit more cities that are LGBTQ friendly. We're always looking for great places to go visit. What's your next trip going to be? Get out of your hometown. Get out there. That's what I write about. I love when we get out there and stir up some trouble and don't stir up some trouble, but, you know, explore a new part of the world. It gives you some great, great perspective. All right, let's talk about Lady Gaga a little bit. We all know Lady Gaga has a history of LGBT activism. Well, just last week, she started her world tour, and this is what happened. A rainbow flag was thrown to the front row of her concert in Vancouver last week, and she knew exactly what to do. It was the first performance of her Joanne World Tour. She wanted to make a statement. She asked security, this is Lady Gaga, she asked security to hand her the flag, and then she posed like such a flippin' rock star, holding the rainbow aloft with all the pride that she could put forth. She said this, quote, to the entire huge crowd there in Vancouver, she said this, quote, needless to say, I have a lot to say about this issue. She then continued quoting her own lyrics and said, quote, but the most important thing I have to say about it is that everyone's gotta love each other. She then launched into a rendition of Come to Mama while surrounded by rainbow-clad dancers. She was singing in Vancouver ahead of the city's Pride Parade this coming weekend. Her moment on stage followed her detailed, crushing analysis of Donald Trump's transgender ban on Twitter. You thought we were done talking about that? We're not. Speaking directly to the president, she wrote this, quote, the message you have just sent has endangered the lives of people all over the United States and overseas, bravely serving our nation. Research says that at least half of high school, university students, and employed young people rarely slash never discuss mental issues with anyone. Many of these young people are transgender and suffer daily from the exact types of social isolation and targeting your message encourages. Sincerely, did you know of the group you singled out today? 45% of them, ages 18 to 24, have attempted suicide already. Within the trans community are many also who are strong and brave. They should be able to serve if they wish, to have honor if they do. That is Lady Gaga making quite the statement there. In TV land, the reboot of popular television series Dynasty will do away with its tradition of homophobic storylines. This is according to showrunners of the show. Speaking at the Television Critics Association summer press tour, the team for the new reboot said the character Blake would be without his homophobic side this time around. Blake Carrington was homophobic in the 1980s series, but this time will defend his gay son. Producer Josh Schwartz said of Blake's son Steven, played by James McKay, he will be confidently gay. Schwartz said this, quote, Steven is confidently gay. He's not toying with his sexuality. He is gay. Blake accepts him. There's no rancor over that issue. The new series set in Atlanta finds Steven supported by Blake, played by Grant Cho. Schwartz added this, quote, we sort of assume that even in some of the more conservative pockets of the South where the show takes place, a lot of those dynamics have evolved. So there you go, the reboot of Dynasty, which is coming out quite soon. No more homophobic storylines. And finally, the Pima County Board of Supervisors in Arizona approved a resolution banning paid sexual orientation conversion therapy of minors. Yay. The decision made this week echoes decisions in 9 other states that have made conversion therapy illegal and takes the public stance that sexual identity is not a disorder or mental illness. This is the Pima County Board of Supervisors in Arizona. This is certainly progress, but it's also a reminder that conversion therapy is legal in 41 states. In 41 states, this harmful practice that does not work, it doesn't work, it doesn't change anybody's gender identity, it doesn't change anybody's sexual orientation, and research has shown it does harm. It increases anxiety, depression, suicidality. It's bad, and yet it is still on the books. It is legal in 41 states. We, my friends, have work to do. To do that work, we got to use our voices. So this is what I encourage you to do every single week. Get out there. Go use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters, for all of our allies out there. When you use your voice, I promise you, when you go with your strengths, it will make you feel amazing and it will make a difference. So get out there and do it. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?